thanks for choosing GoldSeek.com Radio as a trusted business and investing news source. Today's featured guest, David Morgan, the Silver Investor. David Morgan writes the Morgan Report, runs silver-investor.com. Welcome back, David Morgan.
Thank you, Chris, for having me back.
David, you know, we were talking before the show about a very interesting article with someone you're associated with, David H. Smith, and it's just this BSOD. To summarize here succinctly, the idea is simple, it's straightforward. We could wake up in the next 6 to 12 months, and these markets could correct. Precious metals, that is, and particularly silver, but not so much in the direction that everyone's gotten accustomed to over the last 3 or 4 years, skyward. Why don't you give people an idea of what David Smith is talking about here?
Well, David is independent, and he's worked with me for years. We're roughly the same age. He's a little older than me, and he actually found me at the first or second, I think it was the second Silver Summit, approached me as many people did. And of course, the same first name and being Silver Bulls for, you know, on and off for quite some time. And I think one of our daughters were named the same. And I mean, on and on it went. So as things progressed, you know, it was a pleasure really to have David help me out because, you know, being the lone cowboy is fun, but, you know, two heads are better than one. And of course, later we have Chris Marchese, and I had my webmaster almost from day one. I think for maybe a year I did it all on my own. But the point being is David's a great thinker, a great writer, and he does a great deal of writing for the Morgan Report. So a lot of the mining trips that we take and we report and we film, he films as well. And it's all legitimate. I mean, all that gear is required. So he's out there with all this stuff, and he does an excellent job for us on these mine excursions, doing the video blog, which are for our members only, and of course doing the write-up as well. So David wrote this article, Blue Screen of Death. And what he says in this article, most people know what that means, but just a quick review, it's a seldom occurring event that happens on a computer. And most of us these days have one or two or more. And so Wikipedia defines it as a poorly written device or driver's malfunctioning hardware, such as a faulty memory, power supply issues, overheating components, or whatever. And along that thinking, he says, this is kind of where we've been in the gold and silver markets for a very long time. We've had this cyclical bear trend within what David and I and a few others are left to still think it's a secular bull market. So where does this situation leave us? And it leaves us staring at this blue screen of death thinking, my goodness, you know, are these things ever coming to life? Is this over? You know, and of course, you know, many of us have questioned that. And yours truly, it's certainly in my weaker moments thought, you know, it's a possibility. I'm not addicted to being right. But, you know, all of my market study, everything I've looked at goes on the basis that the only time that this would be the end would be, one, the third leg up, which we haven't had, and two, it gets into the mainstream in such a strong manner that it starts to go into the mainstream press, meaning you see, you know, buy gold is going to 10,000, and that's on the cover of Time magazine, or Newsweek says, buy gold before it's too late, or some old thing along those lines. That has not happened yet. I really believe that we're looking at a historic opportunity in the metals. I called the bottom for, I think, the third time. I think I've been wrong twice. I've been close. I mean, if that counts, and depending on who you are and how you trade, if you're highly leveraged, close doesn't count. But we had that 1817 low that held for 14 months, and that was breached. And then we got this 1450 intraday spike low, and it was spike in terms of volume and price, and that held up until very recently. And we got slightly under that on the close in the main COMEX in Chicago. And I think it was 1411, if I remember correctly. And that was a new low, but it also could be a double bottom. I mean, a double bottom doesn't necessarily get to the exact point. Now, is it a double bottom? And the answer is I don't know. And the answer is I will know.
David, I think we could start to have a better idea on that conditional probability within the next 2 weeks, don't you, with the impending FOMC?
Yeah, I would say 2 or 3 more weeks of data based on what the volume shows. Then we'll have a pretty clear picture. So let me just explain that for people that don't know the part of technical analysis that's really important, and that is price and volume. So if we saw much better prices, wouldn't have to be significantly higher, but much better volume and a decrease in the COT, that would be such strong indications to me depending on the numbers, I would say that's it. It's a double bottom, you know, because most of my contemporaries are thinking, well, it's going to go to 12 or it's going to go to 10, and have asked, you know, and the answer is, I really don't know. Could it? I hardly rule out anything in the silver market. I just want to come a little bit back to the blue screen of death, because David and I, you know, discussed this a little bit as he was writing it. And he asked, you know, what was that, you know, famous expression? I'm, you know, keep, you know, take my ego and just blow it off. I use it to be funny. But I said, well, the expression I coined on the Jim Poplava show so many years ago is that silver will wear you out or scare you out. Yeah. So he references that, and he says, certainly this has worn us out. This thing's been over 4 years. He just used that quote, and then he talked about how production is falling off in the silver market. We've got a very good setup for most of the people in the boat on one side saying it can only go lower. I'm through silver. As soon as it gets back to where I paid for it, I'm out. I don't want to ever hear the word again. And you've got a very few that are contrarians to the contrarians, meaning that they say, yep, yeah, I think that David Morgan, he gets it right most of the time, and I don't expect him to be perfect. And I'm not really upset with him buying silver at the $18 level. And yeah, I'm buying at 14. I have a long-term plan, and I'm only going to put this much of my net worth in the metals. I'm not putting everything in my life into the metals, and that type of thinking. And they're like ready for what's coming. But there aren't many of them left, and that's okay. I mean, you know, I can't control a market. I certainly can analyze one, but to get it perfect every time, none of us can do that. Having said all of that, let me just say that I feel fairly confident that due to sentiment, seasonalities, price action, volume, and all we've talked about, Chris, that I would feel very, very good, especially if I was starting out. I mean, I'd love to, because this way I look at it from a metric, and we did this in the Morgan Report for our paid members only, and it was a pretty extensive study, but it's based on the true money supply. And this doesn't make us right. It doesn't make us wrong. It's an academic study, but it gives a good idea. If you base the price of silver versus the true money supply in 2000 versus the price of silver versus the true money supply today, guess what? They're almost identical.
When did that metric get to such favorable levels valuation-wise?
A few months back. Yeah, it's in this range. It isn't when we hit 14. It was actually in the 15 or 16 range.
And you'll notice that we haven't really seen a change in trend with regard to, you know, the St. Louis Fed's numbers on the money supply. I haven't seen a rollover at all in their monthly notation of behind-the-scenes money printing. And we're still on track to something, what is it, $4.4 trillion since the credit crisis.
Exactly. I mean, others have noted that same exact thing. And we're in a position now that, and we have been for quite some time. I mean, we've navigated through the 2008 financial crisis from that point that, you know, it happened and till now. But the way I look at it was the navigation was a sailboat with a half mast and a broken sail. And we've been wandering aimlessly across the sea, and so far we're still afloat.
We need everything that we can have that's a safe haven against the ship going down. I guess it's almost a tired cliche, but it's appropriate. We're looking at an equities market fiasco, okay? And we all know what happened in 2007 when that began. Sure, it took several months. It was the end of 2007, I think, until most people were aware of the fact that things were looking choppy. The waters were getting choppy. But 2008, 2009 are a couple of years that all but the most fleet-footed shorts would like to forget.
Well, I'm going to just go back to the article because I think it's a great way to sum up this interview. And so David writes at the end, so how would a silver blue screen of death event look? Possibly. And here he goes. It's Sunday evening. It's in the overnight markets, and the price of silver rises $2 an ounce. In pre-opening trading the next day, silver stock ETFs opened 50% higher. American Silver Eagles and Canadian Maple Leaf sell out in a few hours. Premiums on junk silver triple from the previous day's level. Local coin shops sell out of physical silver by noon the next day. Silver moves up sharply each day and ends the week $15 higher. Over the next 2 weeks, silver reaches just 25% of its meteoric rise, forming what technicians call a bull flag. On the third Monday, the moonshot continues, easily breaking through multi-year resistance at 38 and then 44. And finally, the all-time nominal high above $50 an ounce, closing a few weeks later above $70 per ounce. For several months, the price forms a broad trading range below a spike high at 80, but is unable to drop below the $55 an ounce level. Almost no one believes this is happening. No retail metal is available, and when it is, the premium is $15 over spot. Primary silver producing stocks trade well above their 2011 highs, and in some cases 50 times higher from their bear market lows. Unlike 1980, silver trading this time is a global phenomena. Internet news is instantaneous, with the Chinese market setting the price. The COMEX has defaulted on its futures contracts and settles by paying out paper promises. So I think that's a good scenario. Is that going to happen? I don't know. But I want to backtrack, Chris, if you just give me a little bit more time and go through the top three or four and comment on them. One is the overnight markets rise $2 to $4 an ounce. Didn't happen yet. In pre-opening trading, ETFs open high percentages higher. But here's the couple that I want to comment on. American Silver Eagles and Canadian Maple Leafs sell out in a few hours. Well, basically, we've been allocating both American Eagles and Maples now for quite some time, which means that allocation only goes to what they call primary dealers. These are the kind of guys who could write a check for $1 million, $2 million, $10 million. I mean, these are big retail shops. Some are wholesalers that sell to the retail shops. And this is really taking place. And then the premiums on junk silver triple from the previous day's level. Let me comment on that, Chris, because I want to get this right. I spent a full day, I mean like a 10-hour day. And I used to do this, used to do it actually once a month. I don't do it that often anymore. I do still take the time to do this. And what I do is I survey some of the biggest wholesalers in the country. Some of these guys have wholesale shops and retail shops.
You get on the horn, David, and you call your contacts in the precious metals community to get a feel.
Exactly. I'm asking them, you got a lot of product, and is there a short on any of them, and what's the demand side like? I ask them all the questions you'd want to know, and I don't do it to, excuse the arrogance, and it's not arrogant. It's just a waste of time to call the coin dealer on the corner. I'm talking, the Mike Maloney's. I'm talking these big, big guys, Dylan Gage. I'm talking people that move size of metal, A-mark, those type of things. So I survey them, and I don't take one answer. I go across the board, and I have several. So anyway, I said to this one last one I forgot to ask, is the junk bag market tight? I was told by others it was extremely. Here's the answer. Extremely, paying $4 to $4.50 premium, and we cannot find them.
Junk silver, does that not generally trade at or even below sometimes the market?
Absolutely. It generally trades below melt. And now it's trading $4.50, and the wholesalers can't find any in size. And I wrote that in the Morgan Report. I mean, it wasn't just me. We asked one of our favorite coin dealers, Richard Natchbar, if he would allow us to use his chart in our report. And we've had a great rapport for years, and he is just a super guy. And he said, oh, sure, you can use my chart. So we, of course, accredited Richard Natchbar for making the chart and showing the premiums on silver bags. And I said in the Morgan Report, and I think it's been 2 months now, it's been recent, that this is usually a precursor to higher silver prices. And, of course, they've gone down from there. I admit that. It's not a perfect timing device. So what I'm trying to state is that this market is about as strange as I've ever seen it. I've been in the silver market more or less since I was 11 years old, certainly not the level I am now, and certainly not, from a teenager through college. I thought about the markets, read about the markets, was obsessed with them almost, but certainly wasn't a big investor. I mean, I'm paying for college. But the point being that I studied these markets for a long time, and in all of that history, I've never seen a market where you have these kind of premiums on junk silver, a tightness in government-issued coins, and India buying such a massive amount of physical silver, and these prices being able to maintain these low levels for this long. I mean, I thought if we saw something below the $18 level, it would probably be a momentary event. For example, spike down to, say, 16, remain there for, a few days, perhaps 3 days, and then pop back up to 18. That's kind of what I expected, and I'll tell the truth. I thought that would be the case, but I'm wrong. It's been at these levels, but it's getting stranger and stranger by the day. How can you have these massive demands of, and yet the price remains where it is? Well, we all know the answer to that.
Another thing that you've underscored in previous shows and in lots of your work and research and papers and whatnot, this is a small market. It doesn't even take, with leverage today, one financial institution, just one Warren Buffett. It only takes one deep pocket, pension funds, institutions. We know they're trying to hold up their Fata Morgana here. It takes some key components, and the silver market, they're whipping it around any way they want to. And maybe that's one of the pieces to this puzzle behind this disconnect we're seeing between reality, supply and demand, the invisible hand, and actual, you know, prices. Before we wrap up here, I'd like your comments on whether or not we need a bottom. You know, why do we have to pick a bottom? I mean, shouldn't we be focusing on the fact that it has incredible relative value? It's, as you mentioned, 60-70% off its recent peak. Talk about a valuation there. It's a wonderful insurance policy against an extremely overvalued equities market, not to mention bond market, not to mention, once again, real estate is starting to, I think, push the envelope, the ceiling on valuations yet again, like we didn't just learn our lesson back in 2009. You know, silver, gold, you know, the other side of the pendulum. That's what we're thinking about here. Let's protect our portfolio. We don't need the absolute bottom. We don't have to be overweighted, but we better have 20 or 30% in the portfolio. Any comments there?
No, well said. I mean, I just go back to the 20-year bear market. And one very good technician, in my view, worked at BMO. I believe it was BMO, and I forget his name. I have his card here somewhere. But, you know, I was in my second year on a speaking circuit or whatever, and he did a great presentation. And I was training for triathlons back then. And he talked about the longer the base, the bigger the move, you know. And of course I related that to triathlon training, because you have to build what's called a base. You have to build this incredible amount of endurance before you, you know, jump into a triathlon. And it's called building a base. And so I thought that was a very interesting analogy to, you know, what I've been doing training wise. And of course this is similar. I mean, we've built a base around the 18 level, 20 level. I mean, look at a chart. The point is, if you look back at the 20-year bear market, you'll see this long line. And that was the base that was being built. Can you say when the bottom was? Well, I got lucky or skillful or whatever and called the bottom. It was really September 2003. And what does that mean? It means that that's when it finally got above 555. I still remember the exact number, and I held that level and went above it. And that was the breakout point on the charts. And I'm not, you know, I do technical work, but I put both fundamentals and technical together. I think it's the best way to look at the market. You know, if you have a hammer and a screwdriver, why not use both the tools when appropriate? But regardless, got lucky on that one or not, or the market told me. I trade differently than almost anybody that teaches trading. I trade by the market telling me what to do, not by me to tell the market where I think it should.
That's how you get in trouble, isn't it? If you start saying, I know more, I'm smarter than everybody who's been looking at these markets 10, 20, 30, 40 years, I'm going to go with what the market is telling you, what it is doing, where it is going, where the momentum is, and put aside my opinions. I think that's good advice.
Well, I want to add one thing, Chris, and then you're going to ask about the site. So the best thing you can do if you're not on the free list is to get on the free list, and here's why. To get on the free list, go to silver-investor.com, scroll all the way to the bottom. We only ask you for two things, some kind of name, first, last, or make one up, but a valid email. Then you'll get an email to that address that you have to verify that that is you. And once that's accomplished, then we'll send you every Saturday interviews like this that you'll get. So you won't miss any of the interviews. And you have to listen to them all, and some people want all of them. Some people want to listen to one or have a favorite or whatever. The reason I'm saying all this, Chris, is that I'm going to be interviewed in the next few days by USA Watchdog. And what he is going to ask me is, how bad will it get? And this is a question that I think almost anybody in the gold-silver camp has asked themselves many, many times. And everyone really wants an answer to that. Well, how bad is it going to get? You know, am I going to need to store food? Do I need extra water? I mean, am I going to lose my job? I mean, is the currency going to go to zero? I mean, all these questions. And you know what the answer that I have is? I don't know. But I have a really, really good documentary called The Empty ATM that I will be putting out the URL to on YouTube to everybody that is on the free list. So the list I just said isn't obligating you in any way other than to get on our mailing list, and you can jump off anytime you want. So for the next month or so, what I'm going to do for the question of the week, rather than answer a question from a member or a subscriber, is I'm going to just say, you asked for it, here it is. How bad could it get? Watch this movie. Please forward this. Tell your friends and neighbors or anyone you think might be interested. Because that's a documentary that shows exactly what happened in the 2001 currency crisis in Argentina.
David Morgan, the Silver Investor. We'll look forward to hearing your thoughts later on in the year. Thank you, David Morgan.
My pleasure.
Here is your mining quiz for the day, compliments of GoldSeek. Which company has the largest undeveloped gold reserve in North America? Seabridge Gold. Now, which company has the largest undeveloped copper reserve in North America? Seabridge Gold again. Seabridge has more gold reserves than Kinross, Yamana, and Agnico Eagle. Last year alone, Seabridge added 515 million tons of new inferred resources containing nearly 6 million ounces of gold and more than 6 billion pounds of copper at their giant KSM project in British Columbia, Canada. Now they are drilling at KSM again with multiple rigs in a 25,000-meter program. Find out more by visiting www.seabridgegold.net. Traded on the NYSE, symbol SA, and the TSX, symbol SEA.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.